Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by financial expert, entrepreneur, and known to many as Mrs. Dow Jones, Haley Sachs. Upon entering the professional world, Haley took note of the content gap in personal finance sector and decided to combine her interest in finances and her background in entertainment to make finance cool. Since then, Sachs has been helping a new generation of earners get fluent in finance. In short, she's making dollars make sense with a side of humor and pop culture to her millions of followers on social media. Haley has been featured in finance publications such as Bloomberg, Fortune, Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, CNBC, Forbes, MarketWatch, Entrepreneur, Barron's, Yahoo Finance, and more. Haley, thank you so much for being on Trading Secrets.
And now I'm on Trading Secrets.
And now you're on Trading Secrets. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh my gosh, an honor to be here.
Congratulations on all your success. Everything, as I'm reading your intro, I'm like, this is everything I believe in. It's everything that I have so much passion for. And I love having people like yourself on because it also gives different perspectives. Like same advice, same idea, different takes. And for me, it's like whatever will click with someone, that's a win. So I'm excited about this.
That's what I always say is like, it's just about finding the right teacher.
Yeah.
Same with like working out. Like you have to find the right trainer that will motivate you. I think it's the same with financials. You just need to find the right person who can really get you going.
Totally. I think one thing that's really cool, and listen, if you're here to take notes, trust me, I'm going to get into the financial tips. We're going to ask. But a little bit on the career side, I find it interesting that your background is actually in entertainment. Mm-hmm. You studied, I believe, film in college.
Yes.
And that's like quite the detour into finance. So walk me through like what that detour was and why.
Oh my gosh. I always say like, you know, there are those financial gurus who are like, I had a lemonade stand when I was little and I was turning the profit and I, you know, Warren Buffett bought his first stock when he was 11. Yeah. I'm like, cool. Like I was skipping gym to buy bags on eBay with a fake username that then got blocked.
I love it.
And was like fully obsessed with looking rich, had no idea how to be rich and was like, oh, I'm going to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so I chose the major that has the least earning potential probably besides like an English major, film. And then my first job out of college was I was a page for David Letterman, which is, I say like, you know, Kenneth the Page from 30 Rock.
Wait, tell me. Oh, the character.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so
like,
cool.
Yeah, but that's like that's where they sent the good pages.
Yeah.
Like the David Letterman pages were like a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
We were from the other side of the tracks.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
How was it like working with him?
So
legend, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, like legend, icon. Yeah.
Legend and you sort of understand the gravitas of fame when you're in that environment because there would be some guests that would come in and you could hear a pin drop, like they took up the room. Like,
just their energy.
I'm obsessed with pop culture, with celebrities, so it was really amazing.
What do you think, like, we're going off a detour here, but like for Dave Letterman in a job like that, right out of school, how much can you make in a position like that?
How much can I make in a position like that?
Yeah, like what'd you get paid?
No, I'm saying literally like I was getting paid hourly about like $11.
Yeah.
And then after taxes, it's about, you know, $7.
Yeah,
so I'm making literally nothing, but I did get free pizza on Fridays.
That's cool.
That was cool because we had a double show day and I was babysitting and I lived in a shitty Lower East Side apartment.
Yeah.
And my parents, I was really fortunate to help me pay rent.
Wow.
Just like $1,000 a month from them.
When at like $11 an hour, obviously mom, dad are helping out with rent.
You just
mentioned that. You teach finance now. You do a great job of it. At any point, were you in debt? Like, did you have credit card issues? Did you have any financial flaws early on?
My biggest financial flaw was just illiteracy. I really lacked the confidence, Jason. Mm. Like, I didn't believe that I was capable of earning money, of being rich. I thought that it was this other world, this other language that was not for me, but that someday magically I was going to get that big check that was just going to set me up for life. But like until then, I could just sort of, you know, rock and roll and eyeball it and, you know, who cares? And what you don't realize when you're living like that is you're actually like you're hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like you think that is the better scenario than just facing your finances head on, knowing how much you can spend. Like I think in my head, I thought this is way more cool. This is way more fun.
Sure.
But I've gotten so much peace from having financial security and from understanding my own income, expenses, all those things.
Yeah, the full circle is really fascinating. You go to Letterman. From Letterman, where do you go?
Okay, so Letterman making zero money.
Zero money.
also so bad at my job because they, and I met my best friend Pat there, and we were both pretty bad because it was a very old school institution. And so they had all of these antiquated practices that I didn't really believe in.
Give me like one.
Oh my gosh. Like we would have to go into Times Square and find people for the audience.
Interesting.
And the stipulations around what you were looking for, I found to be like a little off. I'm not going to say what they were.
Okay. Is that more of a production thing or is that, do you think that's like a Dave Letterman thing?
Yeah, I think it's both.
Interesting.
I mean, I think he's a legend. I'm not.
Yeah. Like, well, no one's perfect, right?
No one's perfect, yeah. But I think it was, there were some weird things. So anyways,
ooh.
Was not the workplace for me, but you know, definitely not. And then after that, I worked at a Pilates studio at the front desk. Yeah. I was a babysitter for a kid on the Upper East Side named Winthrop.
Okay.
I was doing stand-up comedy.
Wow,
I was
really?
I was out every night in the Lower East Side. I was, you know, Ali Wong was performing at that time a lot downtown. Like I was with all of these people who are now like have Netflix specials with them every night. They're performing amazing. And really trying to make it. Writing screenplay, writing a TV show, you know, just trying to break through in any way. And also had a YouTube channel called, that never took off, called First World Problem Solutions.
Okay.
Where I would give solutions to first world problems. And then I saw a job listing for Lorne Michaels, who started SNL, was hiring creative social producers, which seemed like the dream job.
Sure.
And so I sent in that YouTube channel and I got that job. And that was where things sort of took a turn financially because I really wanted to do an amazing job in that role.
Yeah.
And until then, I had just been sort of scraping by, getting away with just, you know, oh, like eyeballing it. Yeah. Whatever. I was never in debt, but I was definitely, you know, had no clue about my finances, was not thinking about my future, just, you know, living fast and loose.
Yeah.
And then that first day, you know, when you have a full-time job, it's my first real full-time job.
Sure.
Do you want a 401k? What do you want invested in? Do you want health insurance? Do you want an FSA? Like what's going on?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. This is not English. Could not understand any of this less, but I do want.
How long ago was this, by the way?
That was like when I was 24.
Okay, got it. Okay.
So I was young.
And what is it, real quick, the creative director in SNL doing this writing, what did that pay at the time?
That was like 47,000. So again, nothing.
Yeah, like, yeah. Still grinding it out entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, entertainment. And that was also, I was realizing too, I think subconsciously that following that track would leave me at the whim of someone else's decision of how much I could make. And I furiously wanted to have that control myself.
Yeah.
At that point, my goal was not as much making money as it was breaking through into Hollywood, figuring out, you know, how I could be seen as a writer, like things like that. But I think also deep down, I was sort of feeling that as well.
How wild is it that you go from wanting so intensely to break through in Hollywood to now being known as Mrs. Dow Jones?
I know.
Where was that breakthrough from entertainment to finance? Like what exactly happened?
Okay, so that night, like after the first, literally the first day at that job.
Yeah.
I went home and I did what any self-respecting millennial, I will admit I am a millennial, even though I say I'm a zillennial, owning it. And I did what any self-respecting millennial will do. And I went on YouTube to try and learn, okay, what is 401k? What is all these things? And I was so bored.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I have a dad who has worked on Wall Street for 40 years. So I knew enough about growing wealth that I knew that it was not, you don't save your way to rich.
Right.
I knew Wall Street had a lot to do with it. And so all of the content for women was very like, here's how to meal prep, skip your gel manicure, make sure you're saving.
In the morning.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, and then the content for men was more about investing, but it was so boring.
True.
And so, and I didn't really see anyone that I wanted to be. You know, it's so important, I think, to like have a role model or like have someone that you're aspiring to be. And so I tried to become that. And
that's an interesting take right there. Like if you're searching for something and you're in an industry where you don't see exactly what it is you want to be, that can create an opportunity.
Totally. That's your hole. That's your niche.
And how long ago was this?
That was like that, like 25, 24, 25. And so I worked there for another 6 months.
Okay.
And then we all got laid off. And so, okay, so I had that night, whatever, where I was like, okay, there's something here. So then I just started to make content, like teaching myself.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I want to learn about this. So started to learn and became obsessed. And it really, I just took to it. I was suddenly at brunch. I wasn't talking about Bella Thorne. I was talking about the end of Brick and Mortar. Like yeah. I was, you know, felt so smart and was so empowered and also interested. Yeah. And I also felt like I'd been lied to because I love celebrity gossip. And I was like, business gossip is just as juicy. Like
it is.
We are missing out here. Like, why am I on the Daily Mail when I could be on CNBC? Like yeah. this is good stuff. And so I went very deep into that and then got laid off, which was heartbreaking, but I was like, okay, I can either go and like gravel for a job at Comedy Central, which I will make again, 47, maybe if I'm lucky, like yeah. $55,000.
Right.
Or I can try and do this. And so I got part-time job writing videos for like rappers okay. at the like—
Your resume is wild.
It's really crazy. Yeah, I know. At Fuse, do you know okay. like Fuse?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was working at Fuse in Times Square and I would like write videos for like all these music people, have them do like crazy stunts, whatever, write it all. And then at night and during the day and around that was building Mrs. Dow Jones. And
that's a wild day and night.
It was a wild day and night. But I was just so excited to like, it was starting, starting to grow. And I was so excited because it felt like I had found this audience of people who felt the same way as me, where they had this insecurity or maybe like desire to learn, but they hadn't really found the right teacher.
Sure.
And that maybe, you know, using humor and pop culture and all these tricks that I could break through to them and we could all get rich together.
And so how long did it take for you? So you start doing this, you're writing videos and ideas for rappers, and then you're doing Mrs. Dow Jones. At like, how long did it take for Mrs. Dow Jones to become full-time?
A year of working like every day, did not miss a day, did not miss a post, grinding.
And do you post every day?
Every day.
Every single day?
Yeah.
And do you write your scripts up before you post?
Everything. I'm like so meticulous. Like it's not a joke.
Interesting though, how your work in, you know, your early 20s actually came to pay off.
Totally.
As you're writing your scripts today. And those scripts that you're writing are making the video so different, which is led to all your success.
I mean, we'll talk about like the format. I feel like it's different now too, like short video versus long form. Like I feel like that all is—
The algorithm and everything is just changing by so the absolute
crazy.
Second.
It's really crazy.
It is wild.
It's humbling.
Yeah.
Why are they doing this to us?
I don't know, but
just
they're keeping us guessing. I think it's like the casino effect where they're like, we need to just like, everyone's got to hit a jackpot. Like everybody now, and like when you hit the jackpot, you go back. And then when someone hits the jackpot, everyone's watching. And they're like, well, I want to hit the jackpot. So they stick around. I think there's like this gambling effect going on with the algorithm, like an addiction style.
Oh, I'm full. Yeah.
Right?
That's like, I think actually
that's,
so true.
That's like what they're doing and how they're doing it. But it's
wow.
crazy. All right. I want to ask you. So you are. They're up to so much.
They're up to no good.
But like, we'll get there. We're going to figure it out. We're going to pinpoint
I think
this.
We could.
You know what? Actually, let me ask you this before I go into some financial tips. You always, part of your strategy is in the beginning of every video, you will say who you are and what you do. Like
yeah,
your mission statement. Why? Talk to me about that.
Oh, I always say, I'm Mrs. Dow Jones, a millennial finance expert, and then I'll show behind me like press that I got
yeah.
or like something that shows that I have authority.
Okay, so you're establishing authority and credibility within 5 seconds.
Because there's so many fakes on social media and there's so many people giving horrible financial advice. And so it's a way to say, hey, I'm credible. You can trust me. All of these places have affirmed that I know that I'm doing great work, that I can help you. And so, yeah, that's why I do it.
Okay. Before I get into financial advice, how long, you're making $50,000 SNL, how long did it take you to clear that $50,000 as Mrs. Dow Jones?
Oh, I mean, okay. So I was in, New York Times, which, you know, really solidified, okay, I'm going to go full time with this, whatever. And then probably took me a year.
Okay.
Well, a year to get there and then a year. But it was, you know, the brand deals at the beginning are so slow and you think they're so big.
Yeah.
And you're so excited and they have probably nothing to do with your brand.
Yeah.
I did like my first brand deal was like a clothing brand. Like I don't sell clothing.
Like, how do I tie this one in?
Exactly.
Script writing this one up.
And I felt very cool, by the way. I was like, oh my God, it's happening.
It's happening.
It's really happening.
Of your products and everything that you have, do you make more money off brand work or off the products that you sell?
I honestly am pretty much equal.
Okay.
And so I have a budgeting template called the Money Book 2.0. We just released it. And it's really amazing because it's in Google Sheets. Mm-hmm. And so all of your data is safe. Like it's not, yeah, it's not like an app where you're, oh, I'm using Plaid, I'm connecting everything. You own it. I don't see anything. It's all on you.
Yeah.
And you can automatically upload all of your transactions and it sorts all them for you and gives you a full financial plan, wow, which is also crazy. Like tells you, because I really believe in being a financial dominatrix. Like yeah. I think that there is way too much choice when you're starting your financial journey.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary. Yeah. I think there are about 4 steps that everyone should do. So let's just do those 4. Start there. After that, get creative. Finances personal. You go, girl.
What is the 4 steps?
First of all, we're saving an emergency fund.
Okay.
Well, first thing would be we're getting our 401k match.
Okay.
If that's offered, because that's free money.
Free money.
Saving a 3 to 6 month emergency fund in a high yield savings account.
Yeah.
Then we are paying off our high interest rate debt, which is any debt above 7%. And I have a free debt planner, free debt payoff planner that will organize those interest rates for you. So okay, if you're curious, like, where is my interest rate? Download the planner, it will tell you. And then after that is max out your tax advantaged accounts, because I don't know why people would contribute to brokerages that are taxable when you can have tax advantages. So I'm like, do those. And then, okay,
Then get cute.
Yeah,
but lack those 4 things.
Yeah, yeah. Get cute after.
It's like when you're building the home, like get your foundation in place before you start worrying about heated floors, right?
Yeah.
Like, come on, let's make it simple.
And we love a heated floor though.
We love a heated floor.
We got to get there.
Yeah, we got to get there. All right, let's go all the way back. I got a lot of listeners right now that have newborns. So generational wealth. Parents right now, they want to know what to do, how to save for their kid, what accounts, what advice do you have? Evan, you should be listening to this. You have a newborn. What advice do you have for moms and dads out there that are trying to put their child in the best position financially?
Well, I would say, first of all, put your oxygen mask on first, because your kids can take out loans for school, but you cannot take out loans for retirement.
Yeah.
And the biggest burden financially to a child is having a parent who they need to take care of, because then it creates a generational cycle where they—
That's the norm.
And then their kids have to take care of them, because they're giving their retirement money to you.
Right.
And so the best thing that you can do is put your oxygen mask on first.
It's a great piece of advice.
And then if you want to open accounts for them, you have to figure out what kind of account you want to do. So there's basically 3 main ways to invest for children. You can do a custodial brokerage account, which is a taxable, just straightforward brokerage account. You could do a custodial Roth IRA, which is like a regular Roth IRA, but it's for kids. Or you could do a 529 plan, which is money that you can use for education costs, but actually, now there's a lot more flexibility with them. You can roll $35,000 of the 529 plan into a Roth IRA for the child if they decide not to go to school, if they get a scholarship, things like that. So those are a great account. And so figure out which of those you want to do. And then what's amazing with growing generational wealth is you don't need that much principal.
Right.
Like for my goddaughter, for example, Zia, when she was born, I put $1,000 in an account for her. I put $100 every month, and I put $500 every year on her birthday.
Okay.
And I plan to do that until she's 18. And then I will stop. And if she gets a normal market return, 8 to 10%, that's all we're looking for. We don't do get rich quick.
Right.
By the time she's 65, she will have like over $6 million.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's very doable, right? With those dollars amount. We're not talking about put $100,000 in here and then $10,000 every year. Like a very, very
consistency.
Doable. Consistency. So be consistent. We have the accounts that you believe in. Now, what about, I like the idea of this whole put your oxygen mask on. You talked a little bit about high interest rate debt. There's a million models. Everyone's got an idea of how to pay high interest rate debt down. If it's over 7%, if anyone's listening to this right now and they got debt over 7%, they do step 1 and they do step 2. Which model do you subscribe to accelerating the pay down of bad debt?
I am all about paying off your highest interest rate debt first.
Okay.
I know that there are some financial experts who say, start with the smallest one so you get a win.
Yeah.
But I want to get your debt paid off the cheapest and fastest way possible.
I agree with you.
So I'm like, let's not waste time, honey. Yeah.
Avalanche model.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Knock it out. Okay. Yeah. Budgeting. it's, you know, we're living in a crazy time right now, yeah. Right? Inflation, it was crazy. Now it's around 2-3%. You got cost of groceries are up like 25% since 2020. The price of things have gotten out of control. So everyone wants the budget. But the word budget makes people want to cringe. They hear it and they're like,
oh, it's a curse word.
It's a curse word. So how do you make it fun? And like, what tips can you give someone right now for budgeting?
Well, I think the first thing with budgeting, and I was that person too, who was like, ew, budgeting, like never, like that sounds like my life will be ruined. Like, guess I'm going on a budget. It means the fun's done.
Right.
Like I was that person. But then what I realized is like, if you reframe it and just think about a spending plan, you can actually put more money towards the things that you like. You just have to be discerning about cutting out the things that don't matter to you.
Because okay.
You can afford anything, but you can't afford everything.
Right.
And I also think that what budgeting teaches you is patience.
Mm-hmm.
I still have tendencies to buy things that make me look rich.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, sure. I like a jean jacket that has a Prada on it. Mm-hmm. Like, I will buy a Louis Vuitton travel bag. Like, it's like, I have that girl inside of me. She's trying to get out. Like, we've done a good job of pushing her down.
Taming her down a little bit.
No, no. But she'll, like, these are Chanel flats. Like, we are that girl sometimes. But what I do is, that's been amazing, is I have automated deposits towards a high yield savings account for non-monthly expenses.
Right.
So, like, if I'm saving towards a trip, if I'm saving for a new phone, if I'm saving for Chanel flats, whatever it is, then I'm putting $100, $200 a month, whatever, towards that.
Okay.
And I'm building up to buy it. So I, instead of buying the bag and saying, where's the money? I know where the money is and then I'm buying the thing.
Okay. Got it. I think that's a great idea. I mean, that's, so it's controlled. It's like, you know how you want to spend your money. You know that you like the Chanel flats, but you're putting a system in place to say, I recognize it. I see it. I'm going to make sure that I'm doing it the right way when it's time to get it.
And I think the biggest thing with budgeting too is really just focusing on what I call your action money, which is the money at the end of the month that you didn't spend, that you earned and didn't spend, that's left over for you to take action with. And at the beginning of your financial journey, that action money is going to go towards your emergency fund.
Right.
And your 401k match. And then it will go towards that high interest rate debt once you get to that step.
Okay.
And then it will go to your tax advantage accounts. And then eventually your action money will go towards your, you know, your whatever you want to buy, your home or more stocks or whatever it is. But I think, you know, there's a lot of rules, hard and fast financial rules. This is how much you should spend on rent. This is how much should be about your wants, your needs, whatever. But I think that if you can get your action money to 15 to 20% and you're, you know, under 45, that's really good. If you're over that age and you want to retire when you're 60, 65, you do have to kick it up a little bit and be more aggressive because you don't have as much time in the market.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. But, you know, I think instead of getting so in the weeds, just focusing on having that delta.
Okay. The delta makes sense. The action money is cool. I like it. 15 to 20%. You had mentioned retirement. That's what, that, you know, there's investing your own assets, your after-tax dollars, or even your pre-tax dollars. But then there's retirement planning. What advice do you have for people that are looking to retire at a specific age, like let's say 60, 65? And then also with that, like people are like, where do I put my retirement money? How do I invest it? What advice do you have for them?
Well, I'd say, first of all, it's great that they know their age.
Yeah.
But also know how much you need to retire.
Yes.
Like, what kind of retirement do you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
Are you trying to be like private jetting from your ski chalet to your like London townhouse? Or are you like, okay, cool. Like, I want to like, you know, live a little bit smaller, but be able to get there quicker.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to know that retirement is a number, not an age.
I
have a retirement calculator free again that we can link as well. So knowing that number is really important. And then I would say just, you know, working backwards from there with those tax advantaged accounts.
Yeah.
So maxing out those first, maxing out your Roth IRA, your, if you've qualified for it. If not, you can do a backdoor Roth.
Yep.
If not, you can do an IRA, doing your 401k, and just going from there.
Okay, I love it. Now people get, they go through the four-step model. They then have their action money. Then they're matching their 401k. They're saving for retirement. They're in a good spot. So now they can get those heated floors. They can get cute with investing. What type of, like, can you give us a little, we talked a little bit about the show. Can you give us a little insight as to like, how do you invest your money, what it looks like? And then with that money today, it's a wild world out there. Markets, like just this week, markets getting absolutely smoked. Like, where do people put their money?
Oh my gosh, right now it's so crazy.
It's like we're living in a wild time right
now.
It is crazy. I do want to get your perspective on that. But before I do, like, where would you tell people to invest their money when they're trying to make money on their money?
The biggest thing that I say about investing is, and I live by this credo, is you do not want an average life. You do not want an average relationship, mm-hmm. but you want average returns. You want 8 to 10%. And once you just live that, swallow that, that's your truth,
yeah.
then you don't fall for get-rich-quick schemes because you're like, no, I'm good. I'm actually going to take, you know, just drive the speed limit on the highway. Yeah. And
I'll get there.
And I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that is the biggest thing, I think, especially right now, if you're on financial TikTok, which yeah. I am, it is a wild world. People are fully acting as though they know how to time the market. They know when the market will bottom. If it was Warren Buffett talking to me, who reads 800 pages a day and has been investing for like, you know, 70 years, mm-hmm. yeah, I would believe him. But anyone else, no. Like, it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market and about staying consistent and not getting swayed by the news, because really the financial media just wants clicks.
Right.
You know? Exactly. And this is a, they're probably making so much
money. They're killing it right now.
Yeah, they really are.
They're absolutely
great to be Rupert Murdoch.
8 to 10% though, where do you suggest people get it? Do you say, do you have like a mutual fund? Yeah. Do you have S&P?
Yes.
Like, what do you think?
I love a low-cost index fund.
Okay.
I'm really into VOO, which tracks S&P mm-hmm. 500. I love me some QQQ, yep. which, you know, gotta get that QQQ. That's a technology index.
Yep.
And then I do like to also have one bond index fund too, which, I mean, I'm 33, so I'm riskier with my portfolio. As you get older, you know, add more bonds into your portfolio, less stocks, so that you have more stability. But I would do like 10% in that. Mm-hmm. And then I would also add a global stock fund because right now at the beginning of 2024, the US stock market is down compared to the global stock market.
True.
And we have been a leader forever, mm-hmm. but who knows if that will continue.
Yeah.
And don't you want to be hedged?
Sure.
So I think it's good to have a little bit of global exposure as well. And that's something that I've recently been committed to.
You guys just got a full portfolio right there. Now go
build
it.
But I'm not a financial advisor. And if you take this advice, it's on your own terms.
It's on your own terms. Yes. So if you lose any money, don't be crying to Mrs. Dow Jones over here. All right. You said get rich schemes.
Do you give advice to that degree?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 100%. I think every portfolio wise, I think that's exactly what you said. The only thing is, I think you have to understand, you're like, when you go to a casino, I say, you got the one friend who will just sit there and not gamble at all, but he'll take the free drinks, right? And let's say a drink is 10 to 15 bucks. He has 5 drinks. You know, he made, let's say, 70 bucks because he didn't pay for the drinks. You have the other friend that takes 1,000 bucks and puts it on red. That person has the ability to lose 1,000 bucks or have 2,000 within minutes. And that's risk tolerance. And I think to build your portfolio, you really have to understand, like, who are you in that player mm-hmm. at the casino? Yeah. And then you can build the portfolio accordingly. But to your point, like, when you make these high risk plays, there is a lot of downside too. And we've seen successful investors slow and steady, looking at the Northern Star as opposed to worrying about tomorrow, right? And there's so, like, how many people have lost their ass with these NFTs, with all these different meme coins?
Melania coin.
Like, what's that with Bitcoin, all everything like that?
Are we waiting for Jason coin?
Jason coin. That's not happening. But do you, like, what's your take on cryptocurrency?
Look, I think for me, it's not something that I am invested in to a big degree. Like, I have a small percentage of my portfolio in it that honestly was from about 4 years ago.
Good timing. So
yeah, good timing. I haven't bought more.
What percentage of your portfolio?
Oh my gosh, like under 5%. Cause I take risks with under 5%. Like, and I will tell you about my worst investment too, but it's like, I have a little bit of money that I just play with, but it's never gone well, Jason.
Okay.
Like, it's,
well,
I wouldn't say I'm a stock picker. I'm very good at, like, you know, I know the rules and they work.
Yeah.
And so, and I understand Wall Street, and I also have a dad who's a financial advisor and works with really, really high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
And he does the same thing for them. So I'm like, okay, like if they are buying S&P, if they are buying like QQQ, if they're doing all this stuff, if it's good enough for the them, billionaire,
yeah.
it is good enough
not for me.
Yeah.
Perfectly said.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. What was the worst investment you made?
Okay. The worst investment I made, and then I want to know yours.
Yes.
Was during the pandemic.
Yep.
I was living with my parents and I was doing about 2 hours of Tracy Anderson a day, which I don't recommend. And and so I was always dehydrated, but you couldn't go to the grocery store and get coconut water, which is what I always go to for like electrolytes, whatever.
Sure.
And so I bought dehydrated coconut water powder from Laird Superfoods, Laird the surfer. Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, this is genius. And I bought the whole line, all of his non-dairy creamers, everything that he got, I was like Laird pilled.
Yeah.
And so I put about, and then I was like, wait, Laird is public? I can own Laird Superfood? Sick. Like, this is going to the moon. Like, people don't even understand, like, what's about to happen with this stock. Like, meanwhile, didn't look at the fundamentals, had no idea what kind of debt they had, didn't understand, like, who was on their leadership committee. Like, had truly no understanding of the company at all, was fully doing it based on instinct and impulse.
Yeah.
And of course, now that $1,000 is worth $90.
Okay. So $1,000 loss, though, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but it was
the worst investment.
But like, I wanted it to be so much, Jason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You thought it was going to be like the retirement plan, $1 million bucks tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
See? Get rich fast. Doesn't work.
It really doesn't.
My worst was, it was in 2020. This is everything you don't do and everything I tell people not to do is by the time you hear news, it's already too late. Like the price is already baked into the stock when you hear the news. Like when you're seeing something, even those clicks, the financial.
You should listen to your cousin who's like whispering.
Right.
To you about
if they're whispering, it's too late. And I didn't know anything about the whole NFT space, but I knew that it was like booming. And I had a NFT master. It's like, you got to go with this publicly traded company. They just IPO'd. It's there. You know, none of the financials made sense. None of the fundamental and nothing made sense. But he was like, you got to do it. Trust me. It's going to change your life. And I put like, I didn't do 1,000. I did like
50?
20 or 25,000.
Oh, dang.
Lost every penny of it.
No.
Every penny of it. And that was what I said. I said, like, listen, this is the advice you give. Like, do not just jump into something, understand it.
If I could
have
it,
don't
anyone.
Get the business. And it went to shit. So that was my worst one. What was your best one? What do you think the best return you ever got in investment?
But I will also say just on that every like good investor that I know has had that moment.
Yeah. And you need that wake up call because it rings your bell. And you know how many momentum things I've heard since then? Got to jump on this, got to jump on that. And then I'll do my due diligence and I'll realize like that's a terrible move. And as a result of that, I didn't invest in it and all those companies popped and flopped.
There you go.
So that was an expensive lesson, but probably saved me in the long run.
Totally saved you. And I'm the same way where it's like, if you tell me the stove is hot, I don't believe you. I need to touch it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's perfectly said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. How about your best in class investment or one that you're most proud of, like your Oscar of investing?
My Oscar of investing, I would say probably in myself.
You
knew I was going to say it.
Because the return on your business is
huge.
Material.
Yeah. Like I have a really great team around me. I have invested in like executive coaches to learn how to be a better leader. I've invested in people to help structure my business. I've invested in like, you know, I've put a lot of money into myself as a CEO because being a content creator is a completely different job than growing your business.
True.
And that's been something that I've seen a big return on because you're only as good as your team.
Right.
And if you can't keep your team, then you have no business.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. I think it's a great answer, especially with the earnings potentials in so many business right now. Invest in yourself. You'll see the returns. Yeah. I've asked.
But also invest in the stock market too. Like,
but yeah. Don't forget about that. Yeah.
Too far with investing in themselves.
But anyone, I think like of any industry, whether it's an athlete, comedian, whatever, that's found massive success. When I ask that question, it's almost always themselves, you know, because that's just, that's your brand. And no matter where you're working, even if it's for large corporate, you have a brand within that corporation.
Totally.
And investing in that will pay massive dividends within the company or outside the company.
Such
and I think
good
that's
point.
Huge. All right, we got your best investment. We got your worst investment. What about like credit cards, bank accounts, brokerages, apps? Do you have any best in class that you think people should look into?
Well, I would say that there is like a money mise en place, like in when you cook, like when you see people on Instagram who are chefs, they always have their little bowls with the celery cut and the carrot and they have it ready to go and they can put it in the pot and whatever. And so I always think about that with money, where it's like you have to have all the right ingredients and places to organize everything. And makes sense. I think everyone should have a checking account.
Is there a certain bank that you like? Do you think there's a good bank, bad bank, or anything like that?
I mean, I think the biggest thing with checking accounts is that people have Stockholm syndrome with them and fully have the same checking account that they got when they were like, you know, got their first job.
True.
And they don't realize that they are paying fees.
Right.
And it is much more expensive to acquire a customer than it is to keep a customer.
That is so true.
So a like 5 to 10 minute phone call to your bank could release you from those fees. And it's pretty simple.
How about credit? Do you credit card? Do you have like a credit?
I love a credit card. Of course, like you have to be able to spend within reason and know your own limits with it. It's not free money. I love American Express. I have a really old card from my bank because you never close your first credit card because that it's a
is that a credit tip?
It is a credit tip. Okay, this is a great credit tip. So, you know, your part of your credit score is based on your credit history.
Okay.
And so a lot of people, when they want to like improve their finances, will be like, okay, I'm going to cancel that credit card that I've had since I was 18 that I got at the college fair.
Those college fairs.
Yeah,
those?
They really got you.
Like, you get a free pack of gum if you get like
a pen.
Get a pen. Use a credit card. We're going to stick it to you for 10 years.
Thank you.
How did that, like, that's so predatory.
So predatory.
Like, the fact they did that. Okay.
I know. We really got to rethink those college fairs. Yeah, maybe there's an opportunity there for us.
Yeah, there is.
There is. We're building.
We should go like next to all of them and like protest out there.
Yes.
The speakers, don't do it. Don't do it.
Or like undercover.
Yeah, yeah.
Have like a little van outside with an earpiece.
Yeah. But those you say keep them.
Okay, so the oldest credit card that you have, if it is a no-fee card, put a small subscription on it, $15 whatever subscription a month, and keep it active because closing it will hurt your credit score.
Tell people how. But like how, why would it close it? Why would closing it hurt the credit score?
Because it would decrease your credit history. So if I've had one credit card since 2016.
Yeah.
And all my other credit cards I got 2020, 2023, whatever. If I close the 2016 one and they're looking at me as a lender, I don't have as much history. I don't have as much clout to them as like, oh, she's trustworthy to give money to, you know,
like the examples you give.
Yeah. Like
clout. It's like being the senior
you want to get your clout up, Jason. And as long as the card is no fee, it's no stress off your back.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's
like true. So just keep it. Like I have that, you know, stupid dingy card that is in my wallet. Just
collecting dust. There.
Yeah. Collecting dust.
And it increases and your overall, like your total credit then is, right? So there's your usage rate is low too.
Totally. Yes.
You got it all. You got the credit tips, the investment tips, the budgeting tips.
What are your favorite credit cards?
I mean, I think it all depends. You have to align it with your spending. And then I think you have to align it with just what you do on a day-to-day basis. And I think I use the Amex Delta Reserve because of—
Are you a big Delta guy?
Big Delta guy. Huge Delta guy.
Yes, yes.
So for me, that's what it worked. But when I was in college and my biggest expenses were gas and restaurants, I used the best cash back. It was a Discover cash back.
That's still a great card.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and I think it changes. I think there's a flavor of the month with credit cards, but I think you should use credit cards and you could be rewarded heavily for using them appropriately.
And building your credit score is invaluable.
Yeah. And I think from an apps perspective, I mean, I got to check out the MoneyBook 2.0.
I'm going to give it to you. You're going to love it.
But
it's amazing because you need a financial home base.
Yeah. You need,
And whatever works for you. Like, that's like, if
and who has the time to be like crunching these numbers all the time? They don't. You need tools to do it for you.
But I do think putting on a little bit of sweat equity to your money home base is a good thing because for me, at least, when I did the apps and it was like bleep, bloop, bloop, and then it was like, here's how much you can spend at the movies. I was like, cool, see you never. And threw the phone down. Yeah, bye. Yeah. And so I think there's a little bit that comes with having to go through it.
Yeah.
That's really good. And what's great too is once you have a money system, it really should just take you like 10 or 15 minutes to review every month.
Yeah.
You know?
True. Yeah. And think about the impact that has.
It's a huge impact.
Yeah. Let me get you this. You hear all this financial advice out there, financial TikTok. What's the worst piece of advice you saw out there that people are like looking at and thinking through?
Oh my gosh. There's so
You're like, where do I start?
Yeah, there's so much bad advice. Like, there's so much bad real estate investing advice. Mm-hmm. Like, take this loan and then you can buy all these rental properties and then you're going to be so rich. Like, no, so risky. I've seen so many people being like, cash out your 401k and invest with me. I will get you 40%. And it's like, so okay, bad. Really bad.
So bad.
I would just say, getting rich should be boring. Mm. And so if you're listening to anyone who makes it seem easy and fast and exciting, then they probably are the ones who are getting rich from you.
That's brilliant advice. Brilliant advice. Let's talk about current state. I've seen recessions on the horizon. I've seen your content talking about what's going on. Tariffs are impacting the current market. If someone said right now to Mrs. Dow Jones, give me your update on the status of the economy. Give me a state of the union. What do I do in this market? Do I buy real estate? Do I not? Do I invest? Do I not? What's happening? What's your take on the current economy?
I think that like all of the recession news has put people into a personal recession where they are like so stressed out and feel like they are making that this is their one moment to get rich in their lifetime and that they need to like jump or do so much stuff. And like that, making decisions from that place never leads to anything good. Okay. I will say that there's two types of people when the market is down. Type A will get really scared, sell everything,
panic,
and will never get to ride the high up again.
Yeah.
And then there's person B, and this is rich people who know that the market historically has always come back, have a long time horizon, are not being impacted by the news, and are instead looking for opportunity to buy assets at lower prices because, I mean, I love a sale. Assets are on sale.
Yeah.
I would say for me to really want to buy real estate, the rates would have to be lower for me.
Okay.
But I think that if you're buying it for where it's in your financial plan and you're like, I'm having a kid and this is my dream to own a house and whatever, great, do it now.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to. But in terms of like getting in on the investment, I don't think there's any urgency yet.
Okay.
And so I really
hold
just...
Hold if you think hold right now.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I'm hearing too is you're saying you can never time anything perfect. Understand how you react in these environments because a lot of people
That's
either panic
thing,
or sell.
Jason.
And then maybe your advice would be just hold a little bit.
Hold, but no, it's actually just be consistent.
Be consistent.
Like do dollar cost averaging because I think that there is so much pressure on timing the market. And really what I was saying with real estate is like if there's another like recession as 2% mortgage rate moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might
jump on it.
Yeah. I might jump on that. But like, who knows if that's, I can't predict the future. Right. I don't know if that's going to happen again. True. And so it's not something that I am holding my breath for.
Okay. All right. Hold, wait, see.
It will just be consistent.
Okay.
Stay calm. And I would also say like, you know, this is a very interesting time economically because with other market downturns and recessions, they can't really be pinpointed as much to like a man-made problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like this is really facilitated by tariffs, which are jerking us all around and the stock market.
What's your take on the tariff situation?
I mean, as Warren Buffett said, someone has to pay them.
Yeah.
It's not the tooth fairy.
Yeah.
So who's going to pay them?
Sure.
Okay, us.
Yeah.
Does it make things more expensive? Of course. Yeah. But I also want to see if the tariffs, like I'm just sort of sick of being, we're having tariffs. We're not having tariffs.
Sure.
We're doing 200%. No, we're doing no percent.
The touch and go. It's like, make a decision,
make
let's go.
Make a decision.
Yeah.
And it's so destabilizing of the stock market because the stock market loves stability.
Mm-hmm.
Like people always say Jimmy Carter was like, he has, people would say, oh, he's a bad president. He didn't do anything. But actually a good president doesn't do much. Mm-hmm. Like they keep things the same.
Consistent.
Yeah. And so, and that's how you keep the economy consistent too. And so, but I also understand that for many people, there's so much job insecurity and fear of layoffs and fear of how they're going to take care of their family. And with these rising prices, it's so overwhelming. And I would say the best thing that you can do is make sure that you have that emergency fund.
Yeah.
3 to 6 month emergency fund, more if you're taking care of more people, because you need to put your own oxygen mask on first and make sure that you're going to be okay. Because look, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. But I do want you to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Because it is a it's a touch and go time. It's a volatile time. Who knows what's going to happen? Every time I look at my app, that's moving 2% one way or the other.
Nuts.
Like, it is a crazy world out there. All right, well, we got so much financial advice, so many trading secrets. Talk to me real quickly about like the Dow Jones brand from here. Mrs. Dow Jones, where do you go? How do you build the empire? What does it look like? 5 years, 10 years, like what's the plan?
I would say just reaching more people and then, you know, also finding more ways to make it easy to manage your money. I've seen so much success with the money book, and it really came from designing a product that I felt like I needed, where I was like, I need something that can actually show me what I should do differently next month. Mm-hmm. Exactly the places that I do need to think about. And so I see a lot of potential in that. And, you know, I think also trying just to break in more to the mainstream media, because I think money needs to be part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So getting a seat at the table for people who maybe wouldn't talk about money and making them talk about money, that would be pretty cool. And you're so good at that. Yeah. I feel like you get people to open up so much to you.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. I think you got to...
You're really a great host.
To get people to like, you know, open up, you have to be open, right? Like
that's
kind of part of like, yeah, show your cards a little bit. But I think the one thing that you're doing so well too is making money fun. And I think just even the example I've saw in your content about connecting the recession to Blake Lively, like it's a trending topic, it's real, and then people connect with it and they want to be part of it.
She is in a recession, but again, that is people are very like, you are anti-Blake.
Yeah, and I'm like, it becomes like,
And I'm like, no, I'm not anti-Blake, but like just objectively, like she's in a recession. Like people are, she is now, her star has dimmed.
Yep. And she is.
Yeah.
And
I'm not saying which side I'm on.
Right.
Again, I am bi.
Yep.
You're bi. But she's in a recession.
Exactly. And I think, and then now people understand what a recession is.
Yes.
And that's, people have to talk about money. They have to understand money. We weren't taught this stuff. It's so important. And I also think, you know, all the financial experts on, and they come on, they get very technical. Like I'm talking to like a hedge fund or private equity guy. You're making this very easy. It's digestible. And I think what you're doing is awesome.
Well, consumer finance is also so different.
Yeah, totally. You know?
Yeah.
But I think you get so many of these people that are trying to teach through the lens of they're still working at their hedge fund.
That's impossible.
That's not understandable. It doesn't make it warm. It's a turnoff.
Exactly. So, it doesn't make it warm. That's such a good way of putting it.
Right. So whatever these products that are coming, I'm excited.
I'm going to come back and tell you about
them. We're going to keep an eye on those.
What's your goal?
The larger goal would be to be able to get financial literacy taught in the school system.
Yeah.
Like it is unbelievable to me. That's not a mandated requirement.
Totally.
Just the basics. That would be like the biggest win of all time.
I'll help you.
But I also think, let's go run the charge here. The other thing too, is I'm big on financial transparency. I think the financial transparency gives us information so that people can navigate themselves in a better way. Right. And if we're not talking about what we're making and how we're doing it, then the people at the top are really profiting off that. Mm-hmm. So just understand different industries, what they're doing, how they're doing it, and take advice from people that are giving good advice. So we'll see what happens. The agency's good. The podcast is good. The book stuff's good. Speaking stuff's fun. I enjoy every bit of it. And it's fun to always talk to someone in the space too.
I would say one other thing that I'm working towards is working less.
Oh,
yeah.
I need to do that.
Yeah. Because I'm in the
What's your screen time right now?
Oh, it's like I work all the time, every day. Like
what do you think it is?
Oh, 24 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, like I looked at mine the other day, it was 17.
It was 17 for sure.
So bad.
17 is so,
All right, work less, but still make an impact. But
make money, but be able to like enjoy your life, take care of yourself.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Haley, you got to give us a trading secret. So it's specific to you, your experience. It could be a financial one. It could be financial transparency if you want. It could be just any life advice, but you can't get it on a TikTok tutorial. You can only get it from what you've done and how you've done it. What could you leave us with?
I would say negotiate your medical bills.
That's a good one.
I went to the hospital I broke my foot.
Okay.
And I had the biggest hospital bill ever.
How much was it?
Like $15,000.
$15,000?
Yeah.
For a broken foot?
No, like it was crazy. I was
there
for-
What did they do to you?
No, it was like, I was there for so long, but it was their fault that I was there for so long because they were not like taking care of me. And then you actually go through the bill and they- have ibuprofen, $2,000. Like it's like all these things that are, if you get the line items of your receipt, it is, they've really jacked up the prices and they will bring it down. And so I also tell this to all my friends who are having babies because they always leave the hospital and they're like—
You're just getting absolutely crushed.
Yeah, it's insane. And so I'm always like, get an itemized bill from the hospital, because just by doing that, that will drive down the bill, and then also call them and offer to pay in full for a discounted price, negotiate the prices down.
So you'll get the itemized and then you'll call them and then you'll try and negotiate it down?
Yeah, but even just by getting the itemized, they'll be like, whoops, sorry, didn't mean to charge you that $5K. And it's like, okay, like that is real money. Like we do need to know where that's going.
So in this example, your $15K, what did you get it down to?
I think I got it down to like $4K.
Wow.
That was good.
That's unbelievable.
And then I got, then insurance helped. But it was because it was egregious what they were charging me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a great trading secret. So, we've never had it.
Yeah. You got to do, negotiate your medical bills is a big.
Negotiate your medical bills.
You got to.
Learn every line item, call them, negotiate it, do it all. Mm-hmm. People are going to need a notepad for this episode. There's a lot of advice you gave. Mm-hmm. Haley, where can everyone find everything you have going on?
Go to financescool.com to get the money book and also to get like all the free products that I mentioned, like the debt payoff planner. I have an emergency fund calculator. I have a lot of tools that will help you implement what we talked about in the episode that are completely free. And then I'm Mrs. Dow Jones, MRS, DOWJONES on all platforms.
Well, unbelievable story from, I mean, working with David Letterman to where you are today. It is so wild how the pieces came together, but also inspiration for so many people that are still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, follow your heart.
Yeah.
And that was like the biggest thing, just like keeping going. I think about that all the time with young people. I'm like, just keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah.
It's another trading secret.
Yeah.
Mrs. Dow Jones, thank you so much for being on this episode of Trading Secrets.
Thank you.